25 years on the PGA Tour and a lifetime member of the PGA Tour and PGA of America. Jay Delsing brings you his perspective on one of the world's greatest games as a professional golfer and network broadcaster. It's the game that connects the pros and the average Joes. Brought to you by Whitmore Country Club. Golf with Jay Delsing is now on 101 ESPN. On the Range is brought to you by Golf Discount. Golf Discount, where St. Louis shops for all its golf needs.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Golf with Jay Delsing. I'm your host, Jay Delsing. I'm here with my buddy, longtime friend, caddy, John Furless. Furley,
glad to be here. Lots to talk about. Fantastic U.S. Open. Got to play some golf with you and a whole lot of other good subjects. Ready to roll.
Yeah, really great. We're we formatted the show just like a round of golf, so this is the on the range segment. And we have a new sponsor, Golf Discount. Welcome to the show, Golf Discount. Todd, your folks, thanks so much for being with us. Golf Discount is where St. Louis shops for all of its golf needs. All right, so basic overview of the show, Pearl.
Okay.
Got to talk about the Open. Gary Woodland.
It was unbelievable. What a great, great Open.
Brooks Koepka.
Yep.
Unbelievable. Would have been the first guy in, what, 113 years or something to
first guy since there was other than Hickory Shafts, I think.
Yeah. Yep. We've got Justin Hoagland, and that's probably right, in Golf Tech. We're going to talk about the greatest golf ever played, and that was at Pebble Beach in 2002.
Wow. Yeah.
Really cool stuff. Got a great story about Mac O'Grady, and this week on tour is the Greater Hartford Open.
Plus, you were up at Pebble, so I want to hear some details of what you were doing running around that joint.
That's right.
Pretty cool.
That was very
awesome.
Will you tell
me a little bit on how things have changed, even from the not-so-distant future when you were out there?
We could talk about this forever, but for hours. And then I got an interview with a cool friend of mine. His name is Phil Frangs. He is the founder and CEO of Logistics, a huge supporter of golf. Great story. So we're going to hear about him on the front and the back nine. So, all right, let's do this. Let's talk about the U.S. Open.
Yeah.
Pebble Beach. I mean, I got a text from Olin Brown that said, and Olin's a good buddy of ours and the show and of golf, and he said, shouldn't the U.S. Open be at Pebble Beach every year?
Don't you wish?
Oh, man. It just
looks
different.
Plus, it's different every single time.
I know.
Wind, no wind, dry, not so dry, all the different combinations. And it is just gorgeous. Still some of my fondest memories is driving 17-mile drive, being around there with you, and then caddying on 18th hole. I mean, it does not get any prettier in the world, maybe in the world, period,
right,
let alone the world of golf.
Should we stand up and give Gary Woodland a standing ovation? Should we do,
I'll tell you what, I doubted
him.
Can you
do a cartwheel?
I doubted him. I don't think he's ready. 0-7 when he's in the lead after, three rounds or two rounds?
Yep.
Something in that ballpark. I'm thinking, no way can he pull it off right in. He was a rock.
Stud. Okay, so let me ask you, which shot was better? The 3-wood from 256 at 14, or the 60 off the front right edge of the green on 17?
I'll tell you, for me, it was the 60 off of the green on 17 because forever he's been able to hit that 3-wood where he hit it, okay? Because that's who he is. He's got the power. But he put in his game, the short game, the last, 6 months maybe, less or even less than that, and that we know where that thing could have gone.
Oh, he was saying, he said afterwards, he's so honest, I was, 4 was fine with me if I got a 4, and he almost made a deuce.
It was so pure. It was so pure. Well, but I like that they were talking about how here's a guy who's already world class that went out there, looked for other parts of his game that he knew he needed to work on, and he went from 130th or some dang number on the tour to leading at least in this week. And obviously other good things have been happening with him, with the other wins, the other top finishes he's had. And you know it's not easy to bring that new short game onto the tour under pressure. You can kind of get things going and be around the green, but, I watched you go through that transition from not being as productive as you needed to be.
Gary's probably a little quicker learner than I am.
Well, maybe, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah,
bringing it on the golf course and then bringing it on when you got to hit that shot at 17.
No. Well, wait a minute, especially because you got a hole and a half left to win the U.S. Open. No, remarkable. And to top it off, one of our shows, Golf with Jay Delsing's favorite stars, is Amy Bakkerstedt.
Yep, we've talked
about
her.
And who shows up on the Today Show when Amy's on there with her dad, but Gary Woodland, and presents her with the U.S. Open trophy.
I missed that.
You didn't see that?
No, I did not see that. That's
what
awesome.
Rock are you living on? No, Pearl. Unbelievable.
I know he called her right after the tournament. I watched that part of it and just saying, hey, thanks for the, you know, the inspiration, the clarity, and all that kind of stuff. And that was clearly something changed in his life.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Just whatever.
Well, you could tell it at Phoenix, and I think we caught it. You and I talked about it several times. That encounter with her affected him.
Yeah, there's no question. Yeah. There's no question. We are going to get Amy on this show. That would be awesome.
You could do that.
It would really be fun. Yeah, absolutely. I'll reach out to her dad. And yeah.
Well, I think her dad kind of does stuff with her, right?
Yeah, absolutely does. So, yeah, great stuff. Just terrific stuff.
But what did you think? What did you think going into the last round? Did you think he could do it?
I did. I did think he did it. Did I think he is he capable? For sure. Did I think he would do it? Huge questions.
You know, there's only one guy, and I'm not always in line with him, but Mark Rolfing on some of the pre-shows, and he got kind of emotional saying he can do this. And he was really the only guy that was willing to kind of throw it out there. Everybody seems to like Gary Woodland. I'm sure you know him a little bit. I've never met the guy.
Great guy.
Hear nothing but good things about him.
Yeah.
And but everybody's kind of like, yeah, but I'm not sure he can pull this off, you know, maybe a couple more times.
Well, think about this, though. Think about it from a different perspective. He's got history almost working against him where Brooks is trying to go for the three-peat. Mm-hmm. And who knew Justin Rose would fade so much? It's interesting, though. Did you watch Sunday's round at all? Did you get to see it? I watched quite a bit. I know you
every
were
shot.
Traveling.
Every shot. Okay. Yeah, I was traveling the day
could
before.
Could you see Justin Rose keep getting under those short irons a little bit?
But for 2 days, I mean, Justin Rose on Saturday, too, was
all
was
over
pretty clunky relative to Justin Rose.
He is a strategist, Pearl. He is one of those few guys in the modern game that can go point A to point B regularly.
But let me ask you a question, and I don't want to get off the track here too much. They also talked about him making kind of a wholesale equipment change about, what, 6-8 months ago or something like that. How do you go from world-class ball striker, as in maybe the best in the world at the time, and change a bunch of equipment? So that's another subject maybe for another time.
Yeah, right.
But that to me was a weird one. And clearly you can tell it's just not clicking for him because he's hitting a lot of unlike Justin Rose shots.
Yeah, to me, I could see the swing just looked like it was off. And who knows? You know, there's that extra, maybe a little bit of extra doubt. I mean, obviously, Pearl's for the money.
Plus, he's missing
it. Has to be changing for the money.
He was missing it in the wrong places. You can go out and miss it a lot, but he
kept
missing.
Short-sighting himself on the downhill, like on 13, missing out to that. I totally. That's so far off from where, you know, he's aiming left of the flagstick, and he's missing right of the flagstick and right of the green. No way. Yeah. Not for him.
Well, Adam Scott made a little bit of a run. I was hoping to see more there. And then, once again, just kind of a nasty putt. I think he whipped one out of bounds, too.
He did. He hit one out 13? Of bounds on 13. I didn't think it was possible. So, Pearl, if
no,
you're
wait
standing.
Wait a second.
I didn't say 14. I said 13. Come on, man. It's like.
Yeah, that's way off.
Let's see.
Way offline.
It'd be like if we're sitting out on Olive Street Road and the fairway goes right down the fairway, it'd be like hitting it over almost over your right shoulder.
Yeah, yeah. Really, really not him.
And no.
Then he can miss some putts, which has kind of happened too a little bit at the end.
Right.
But for him to miss shots like that, that's very unlike him.
Yep, yep. I've got let's visit with Justin Hoglund.
Okay, let's talk.
With Golf Tech and hear what he's got to say for us this week. The three Golf Tech properties here in St. Louis, Justin Hoglund, and he is going to talk to us today about some club fitting.
Right, Jay. This is a real important area for we as professionals. We get to teach lessons, but also instruct people on how to improve their game from a equipment standpoint. And even the most elite players in the world are perpetually looking for opportunities to improve their games. And for sure, we see that mid to high handicap players can benefit the most in getting custom fitted for the right equipment. And we see that those caliber players a lot of times shy away from getting fit for clubs for various reasons. It's not worth the hassle. They don't really want to think that a fitting would help their game. One we hear the most perhaps is my swing's not yet ready for a club fitting. It's not good enough for a club fitting. But the truth is without a properly fitted set of clubs, a golfer's swing and mechanical changes may fail to reach the desired outcome if they don't get fit. So playing with misfitted equipment can really undermine the most talented athletes in the world in all sports, but not just golf. So, you know, we find easily more than half of golfers playing today haven't had a properly fitted set, and therefore they really leave opportunities out on the golf course and lowering their scores, you know, due to their lack of fitted equipment. So, you know, I always say it's like tailoring clothing, tailored clothing versus off the rack clothes, you know, like a good suit that we would wear. A custom fitted set of clubs is made for your specifications, designed to play up your strengths and compensate for any weaknesses. And most of all, it ups a player's confidence once you go through it. And just so your listeners know, I encourage them to get fitted, but go through the process, whoever it's with. If it's with Golf Tech, that would be great. We can help you. It's well worth the time to see that your equipment is fitted and that it's not holding you back. And we recommend that you what you need based on data and comparisons of product, shafts, heads, et cetera. Once we compare those, we'll know exactly what you need. We're measuring things like length and lie angle and grip size and flex and speed and shaft weight, et cetera. The process here at Golf Tech takes about 90 minutes. It's a launch monitor driven fitting and sure to make improvements on one's game. And we'd love to help any of your listeners considering a really good in-depth club fitting.
Well, that's great, Justin. Folks, get yourself down to Golf Tech. Get yourself fitted, as Justin said, somewhere, because it can really make a difference.
Thanks, Jay.
Okay, buddy. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. That was sweet, quick, and easy. That's great, Justin. Thanks so much for the time. I want to tell one quick story about the Hartford Open. I'm playing up there, probably 99, something like that. I get paired with Mac O'Grady and Scott Gump, who everybody called Forrest. It was a nightmare pairing. A nightmare pairing.
If you
know
characters
right?
on the tour, you just found two of them.
Right. So I get on the 10th tee, shake hands with Mac. He's got a glove on his right hand. Now, Mac's a right-handed golfer, and always we wear our gloves on the left. Mac, for people that don't know this, was proficient at playing both left-handed and right-handed and wanted and sought the USGA out to see if he could be a non-pro left-handed. Have his amateur standing as...
That's not overly surprising coming from
that. That is not. So where am I going with this story? Look down at his bag. He's got a carry bag. No tour bag. Got a carry bag. He's got a kid probably 12 years old. Cute little boy carrying his bag. I look in his bag going down. Oh, we're standing on the first tee. He's got a bag full of lefties and a bag full of righties.
He's got
a left-handed driver.
He's got 28 clubs in there?
He's still got 14 clubs. He's got a half a bag of lefties and a half a bag of righties. He's got a left-handed driver. Guess what kind of putter he used?
Either way.
Bullseye.
Exactly. I know. That works.
So, folks, bullseye, you can putt left-handed or right. He's got a left-handed wedge, a right-handed pitching wedge. He's got a left-handed 7-iron. Right.
On the tour.
On the PGA Tour. Stand up on the 10th hole at Hartford, and he flares this thing out into the maintenance area to the left. It's not out of bounds, but it's a
was
hassle.
He lefty or righty when he did that?
He was a lefty.
Okay.
No, so here's where I'm going with this story. So I'm thinking, I cannot believe this guy would disrespect the tour. I mean, there's a guy that wants to die to get in this tournament, and he's going to jack around with it. Right. So we go down there, and I said, I don't know if you remember a guy named Frank Cavanaugh. He was a rules official.
I don't.
I used to call him Dr. No. Because every time he saw me, he'd go, no, no. And actually, one time he came up and I said, hey, Frank, can I get a second opinion? He goes, you didn't even ask me yet. I go, I know. Because I know you're going to tell me no, so get the hell out of here. Anyway, we go out, and he goes in there and comes back, and I wave him over. I'm in the fairway. And I said, hey, Frank, I got to ask you something. What happened in there? He goes, oh, Mac had his condition. He was over by this drain and got a drop. And I said, really? For a left-handed shot or right-handed? He goes, what are you talking about? I go, did you look in his bag? Did you see he's got a glove in each pocket? He goes, I'm out of here.
Did he really?
Mac shot.
How does that work? What do you, left or right? Or well, you get your choice?
No, who the hell knows? I don't, no one's ever done it before. Mac shot 46.
That's bringing that to the USGA and the RNA to get that one figured
Ridiculous.
Out.
Ridiculous. He shot 46.
That's good. For
23
for
left.
How many holes?
Nine. 23 lefties, 23 righties. Looked at me as we're walking to the 10th, the first tee, our 10th, and said, my head hurts. I'm done.
Wow.
Never forget it.
Yeah. How could you?
How could you make that up?
What was the Gumper doing in this situation?
You know, he's like looking around like, wow, look at those trees. Look at that. Woo.
He could play.
He could definitely play.
Yep.
All right, Pearl, that's going to do it for the On the Range segment. Man, that went quick. We got to take a short break.
Okay.
Stay with us here as we move to the front nine. This is Golf with Jay Delsing on 101 ESPN.
Doster, Olam & Boyle, LLC are a proud sponsor of Golf with Jay Delsing here on 101 ESPN. The firm was started in January 2015 by Mike Doster, Jess Olam, and John Boyle, three veterans of the St. Louis real estate, banking, commercial, and corporate legal landscape. The firm was founded on the shared view that success should be measured by client and community satisfaction, not profits for partner. The firm's focus is on business, real estate, corporate, finance and restructuring, and succession planning. Since its founding in 2015, Doster, Olam, and Boyle have been involved in real estate, business, and corporate transactions with a combined value in excess of over $1 billion. For decades, Doster, Olam, and Boyle lawyers have been recognized as leaders in their practice areas by their peers. Doster, Olam, and Boyle, LLC. Extraordinary talent, ordinary people. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
Joe Scheiser has been in the loan office business for 26 years at USA Mortgage here in St. Louis. He's closed over $500 million in loans and specializes in pairing the right loan program just for you. He offers unique loans for first-time homebuyers, VA loans for veterans, no-cost loans for refinances, and even cash-out opportunities to pay off those credit and debit card bills, or even to make those much-needed home improvements. Don't wait and miss your chance to improve your current financial position while rates are still low. Call Joe at 314-628-205 today and tell them Jay sent you.
You're listening to Golf with Jay Delsing on 101 ESPN. You can find Jay online at jdelsinggolf.com.
Welcome back, St. Louis. This is Golf with Jay Delsing. Jay and John are here to bring you this segment we call The Front Nine. Please reach out to us with your questions, comments, requests at jay@jaydelsinggolf.com. Each week, if we select your question or comment, we read it on the air. You will receive Golf or Two at Gateway National Golf Club, compliments of Walters Golf Management.
This week's question is from Henry. Henry asks, I have heard you mention on the show and now heard Curtis Strange talk about the term flighting when talking about hitting mostly, I think, irons. Can you explain in hacker's terms what that means? Why is it important? And then how do you do it?
Well, Henry, first of all, we're talking about hacker's terms, so let's explain what it is first. No, flighting is real simple. It's controlling your trajectory. And what happens, Henry, nowadays with this golf ball, it wants to climb. It just wants to
and
climb.
And the clubs, right? Aren't the clubs yeah. kind of wanting to climb, too?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, driver, you know, yeah. high and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't see many guys flight their driver too much, but they can. Yeah. And to your point, Daniel Berger does. Woodland was in Pebble.
They yeah. talked about it. Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so flighting, that's basically what it means. It's done mostly, Henry, when you watch the British Open and you see guys with abbreviated finishes, meaning their hands aren't getting up above their shoulders to hit these shots. Okay, and it's also kind of referred to as a knockdown shot. Reminds me, Pearl, how great Phil Mickelson did at Pebble Beach, last round of the AT&T.
That's why he won. Yep.
Crappy weather, rain, all that jazz.
Knocked it down.
And shot, what, 30th last night?
Blew everybody away.
Won by six.
Broke our prediction that he couldn't do it. Right. And yeah, unbelievable.
Right.
In his rain suit and everything else.
So that's basically what it is. Why it's important is because it'll help you control your distances, especially when you get even as much as a 10-mile-an-hour breeze. It can affect it.
Distance, but also general control,
yeah.
right?
Right. That's what we're talking about.
Another time, that's weather and that kind of stuff. Another time we would flight it down and move it back in our stance and have it abbreviated is when we're choking our guts out and we're trying to keep the ball in play.
Oh, I thought you were going to say when you hit it behind a tree, you'd be like, yeah, that too. And get it under that tree. Yeah.
No, you know, though.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
You're coming down the stretch, you're trying to keep the dang thing in play so that you can win or qualify or whatever.
Yep.
And flighting's a huge deal. Although I've challenged you with that. And you've been noticing some of the young guns. Justin Thomas, I think, is the example you use when you talk to me about it. He doesn't do much he's starting to, but doesn't really do much of any flighting. He just works on hitting it pure.
Yep.
And as the saying goes, a purely struck ball isn't really hardly affected by the wind.
Right,
not
right.
Totally
especially
into that,
especially
but
nowadays. When we were growing up with that blotta ball, not the case.
Yeah.
But, Henry, the reason and how to do it, man, you got to get on the range. You got to get the ball back in your stance. Start with your short irons. Don't try to hit it too hard and abbreviate your finish on the way through to kind of keep the face down a little bit and a little bit it'll feel a little shut to you.
Okay, that's to hit it down, but he's asking flight. So generally when they say nine shots in the bag, right, it's the three different heights and the different shapes. So kind of left to right to left, straight, and then low, medium, high. That's kind of, quote, the nine shots.
Okay, but when I think of flighting, I don't think of hitting it left to right or right to left. I think of only controlling the trajectory. But to your point, maybe that's what Henry's thinking. But either way you're thinking, it's both correct.
And you're going to handle a lot of that, given if it is the second way, with kind of that shaft lean, you know,
yes,
which is a component of where you put it in your stance and your rhythm, like you said.
Right. So, and if Henry's asking in hacker terms, I'm not thinking he's got the nine shots.
Good point.
Yeah.
Good point.
So that's what it is, Henry. Hey, Henry, email me, jay@jdelsongolf.com, if you want a little more information on that, because that's a really good question. All right, Pearl. Great interview with my buddy Phil. We got to go listen to Phil Frangs with Logistics now.
Tell us a little bit about your company. It was founded in 1989, and how you have kind of connected in golf. One of the things I like to do on the show, Phil, is talk to folks about how they were introduced to the game and why the game, you know, has kind of stuck with them.
Sure. Well, you know, to answer the question, Logistics is a company that I founded in 1989, and our customers are all major law firms. We're responsible to provide to them practice support in the area of documents. So we're responsible for running copy centers and mail rooms and records departments, handling distribution of documents. And we also provide large-scale document production, which is usually referred to in the legal industry as discovery, that's associated with litigation. And we've grown quite a bit, and we're fortunate to have customers all around the United States and customers in Europe and customers in Asia and also down in Australia. So it's been a busy time in my life just keeping up with the needs of this company. But you know, this whole idea of golf, it's an interesting thing. I was introduced to golf because I delivered a paper, afternoon paper out in San Mateo, California, and I had a customer, and the customer got to know me, and he kept asking me about coming down to Junior Golf Clinic. It turns out he was a retired Air Force guy, and he worked as a starter at Bay Meadows Golf Course, which was a nine-hole golf course in the middle of the Bay Meadows racetrack, horse racing track in San Mateo. And so one summer, he was really working on me, trying to convince me to come down, and I kept giving him every reason why I couldn't. You know, I didn't know anything about golf, and my parents didn't play golf, and I just kept going down the line, and finally I said, I don't have any golf clubs. And this man, this dear man says, listen, you bring $25, that'll cover you for five lessons, and just come and see me when you get there, and I'll make arrangements for your golf clubs. So he took me back. I arrived, gave him the $25. He took me in the back, and there was a barrel of lost clubs. This man pulled me out a driver and a 3-wood, a 9-iron, a 7-iron, and a 5-iron, and a putter. Found an old bag, threw them in. He says, use these. So I came in at the end of the day and thanked him very much and offered the clubs back to him. And he said, no, Phil, these are your clubs. And so this kind man introduced me to the game, gave me my first set of clubs, and other than my love affair with my wife, my second love affair is with the game of golf. And so I was 12 years old at the time, and here I am 56 years later, still in love with the game of golf.
You know, Phil, well, congratulations. Logistics is a great company, worldwide presence, and some of the things that you've been able to do through your love of the game has been incredible. You have been one of the major fundraisers for the Southern California PGA. Talk a little bit about the money you've raised, and I know that education is really important to you and your mission down there.
Yeah. So let me just correct one thing. It's the Southern California Golf Association. So this is the Regional Golf Association, and the SCPGA is a sister organization, which is the professional organization made up of the professionals that work at all of our clubs and golf courses. But at the SCGA, we have a foundation, and that foundation was started with the proceeds of the PGA tournament that took place at Riviera about 20-plus years ago, 25 years ago. And that organization's mission is to introduce kids to golf, to become a bridge to the game of golf, to teach kids the game, to ask them to stay involved in the game all the way up through their high school years. And then starting about 10 years ago, we started offering scholarships to these kids to help them with their higher education. And so I've been involved in that scholarship committee. I've been on the board of the SCGA Junior Golf Foundation for a number of years now. And what we started was a tournament we hold up at Pebble Beach. And we've had our seventh one this past March. We invite a professional from a club and three amateurs up there. And we play golf for 2 days at Spyglass and Pebble Beach, two of the finest courses in the world. And so we have a great time. But our mission is not just to play golf. You know, the tournament covers the three C's. It's the three C's. It's competition, camaraderie, and charity. And so we've been able to raise four scholarships over the 7 years that we've operated, $865,000. And all of those funds have gone to helping kids that are in the SCGA Junior Golf Program to go on to higher education. And many of these kids are from underprivileged areas, and many of these kids are the first kid in their family to ever even go to college. Oh. So it's a very rewarding thing, and it's about golf, and it's about being just a good person and sort of giving back. Like the guy gave me a set of clubs and got me introduced to golf. It's a way for me to give back as well.
Well, that wraps up the front nine. We're going to take a pause for a few moments so you can hear from the folks that support our show at Golf with Jay Delsing. Come back, though. We have more of the Phil Frings interview on 101 ESPN. Well, that wraps up the front nine. We're going to take a pause for a few moments so you can hear from the folks that support our show at Golf with Jay Delsing. Come back, though. We have more of the Phil Frings interview on 101 ESPN.
Are you looking for a golf training facility and PGA pros to help you out year-round? Make sure you get to Golf Tech. They've been in St. Louis since 2007 and have three convenient locations to serve you. They've got state-of-the-art video equipment, and you can take your lesson home with you and replay it as much as you'd like. Start with a golf swing evaluation for only $125 and let a Golf Tech coach customize a game plan for you. 314-721-GOLF. You can find them online as well, golftech.com-St. Louis. Play better. Swing better. Golf Tech.
I got a big shout out and a thank you to Whitmore Country Club for supporting my golf show. I don't know if you know, Whitmore Country Club has 72 holes of golf. There's a 24-hour fitness center and has a extremely large pool complex. This is a family-friendly country club to belong to. There's a kids club in the main clubhouse right near the fitness center. There are golf leagues, skin game, members, tournaments, couples events are available all year long. If you join at Whitmore, you also get access to the Missouri Bluffs, the Links of Dardenne, and the Golf Club of Wentzville. And the cart fees are already included in that membership. There are no food or beverage minimums, no assessments. Go out and see my friend Bummer out in the clubhouse. He is an absolute jewel and a wonderful guy that will tell you all you need to know. Or you can call Whitmore at 636-926-9622.
Joe Schieser has been in the loan office business for 26 years at USA Mortgage here in St. Louis. He's closed over $500 million in loans and specializes in pairing the right loan program just for you. He offers unique loans for first-time homebuyers, VA loans for veterans, no-cost loans for refinances, and even cash-out opportunities to pay off those credit and debit card bills, or even to make those much-needed home improvements. Don't wait and miss your chance to improve your current financial position while rates are still low. Call Joe at 314-628-205 today and tell them Jay sent you.
After 25 years on the PGA Tour, Jay Delsing takes you behind the scenes from the eyes of a pro. Now back to more golf with Jay Delsing on 101 ESPN.
Welcome back, St. Louis. This is Golf with Jay Delsing. I'm your host, Jay. I got my favorite caddy and best buddy, John, here with me, and we are headed to the back nine, Pearly. I got to tell the folks about our title sponsor of the show, Whitmore Country Club. 90 holes of golf, complimentary golf at Missouri Bluffs, Links of Dardenne, Golf Club of Wentzville, and the card fees are included in those memberships. There's no food or beverage minimums, no assessments. They got a great, huge 24-hour fitness facility, large pool complex, 10 of 3 tennis courts. Their year-round social calendar is really fun. I've heard their holiday parties can get pretty fun. Heard some good stories over there. Date nights, live music, kids clubs. The kids club is massive. I mean, you can take your girlfriend or boyfriend over there, play some golf, leave the kids. They can go hang out. They can go play tennis. It's a family-friendly atmosphere and a great club. Just spoke with them last week, and things are rocking. Despite the crappy weather that we've had here, they're doing really well. Our buddy Bummer, you got to go in the shop and talk to Bummer. He's the best. He is such a great guy. And yeah, so if you want to join a club, and we have talked about Pearl the way we grew up, yep, where our parents could drop us,
love it.
This fits.
It helps grow in the game. That's your passion. That's obviously their passion. We've had Bummer on. That's his passion. It's a great combination.
Absolutely. Their number 636-926-9622. All right, let's go back and finish up this interview with Phil. Phil Franks, and this is his company is Logistics.
Well, I mean, just that story that we've chatted in just these few minutes is like that's not enough, but that's not really why we are talking today. And congratulations. I'm sorry I threw the SCPGA in there. I've been a pro for so long, I should remember the difference between the pros and the amateurs. But let's talk about how I know that you're just an avid sportsman. I know you love racing. I know you still love the game of golf. Tell us the story, how you personally got involved with raising money with this fantastic, I just got off your website, racetoendalzheimers.org, and I'll repeat that for the folks before we get off the air. But just give us some of this background, because this is really a heartwarming, really cool twist how golf is kind of intertwined with your life and your racing and some of your passions and some of your philanthropic work.
Well, I'm happy to. And, you know, this whole racing thing was involves another interesting story. There's a young man that I met about 12 years ago. He was a caddy up at Spyglass at the Pebble Beach Resorts. And I just got assigned to him. I was playing in some competition up there. And the first 5 holes at Spyglass used to just eat me alive. Very difficult starting holes. And it's when you hit number 6, after, for those of your listeners who have played Spyglass, the first 5 holes are in and amongst the sand dunes. And Robert Trent Jones designed that course 50-plus years ago with all of these holes right down along the edge of the water in and amongst the dunes, and they're very unique. And you can get in a lot of trouble down there. And in competition, you know, you can make big numbers. And so once you get to number 6, you start going up the hill into the forest. And the rest of the golf course is in the Pine Forest, the Del Monte Forest, and it's a different golf course once you get past number 5. It just becomes not quite so picturesque, but just hard and long. And so I always find that when you're walking up number 6, when you can take a breath, at least in my case, was probably the first time I breathed. And I started talking to this young man, Nick Galante, who was my caddy. And, you know, well, where are you from and how did you get here? And the story was that he had just been out there for a couple of years in the Pebble Beach area, and he had come so that he could be a caddy and play golf. He came from Massachusetts, but he also had a passion and interest in getting into auto racing. And Laguna Seca is a world-class racing facility in Monterey, and so he thought it was a great place to combine his ability to make a living because he knew golf well. He's the son of a teaching pro. And he would get introduced to racing. Well, he's a good enough salesman that after a couple of holes, he had me volunteering to support him in his efforts. And here we are 12 years later, and we've been racing out on the IMSA circuit for six years now, I believe it is. And he's been quite successful. He's a two-time champion, champion in 2016 and champion in 2018 last year in the IMSA Michelin Pilot Challenge, driving sports cars. We've driven Porsche, we've driven BMW, and we're currently driving an Audi in the touring car class. And so he's a wonderful guy. And, you know, there's a big connection to the golf thing, and that all of a sudden I'm in racing because of a young man on the golf course. But I got involved in the Alzheimer's piece of this whole thing because my wife was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's. She's a young 65 years old now, and her diagnosis was she was 59 years old. And so we've been living with this very challenging disease for a period of time now. And after the first couple of years of me being her caregiver, I was able to bring in some people to provide her care, and I continued in my interest in racing. And you know, the thing about racing is that it's funded by people who use the race car as an advertising vehicle. You know, they're 100-mile-an-hour billboards. There's names all over these cars, and my company's name, Logistics, was on the car. And I wondered what would happen if I took the name off of the car and replaced it with the names of people that are suffering from Alzheimer's or maybe passed on from Alzheimer's, and what would that look like, and what could we do about it? And so I came up with this concept, and we created the Racing to End Alzheimer's Foundation. And so for a $250 donation, a person can put their loved one's name on the car in their hometown. In my case, it's Mimi Schofield Frings, Palos Verdes Estates, California. And so in 2017, the first year we ran it, we were able to put 27 names on our Porsche Cayman at that time. We also, getting back to golf, we also had a big support from Ricky Fowler. He was on the car promoting with us. And so we've done that. And then last year, we were able to put on our BMW 126 names, and along with my company matching the donations of those honoring their loved ones, another company, you Rules, joined me in that. We were able to raise over $100,000 last year. And we're off and running in 2019. We've got three races already. We started putting names on the car after our third race, and or at our third race, and we now have 35 names on the car, and our goal is to get 150-plus names on the car before the end of the season, which ends in October. And it's really an interesting thing. It gives somebody the ability to honor their loved one, to maybe remember somebody that's passed on. Maybe it gives them some closure. Maybe it just makes them feel like they're doing something in what is otherwise a position where you can't, at least I know in my case, I don't know what I could possibly do to change anything, and I can't. But if I can make a difference and maybe help us find a cure or better care for people and the families that are being faced with Alzheimer's, then that's good enough for me.
Man, Phil, first of all, thanks for sharing that. Second of all, it's such an interesting, what you've chosen is such an interesting way to try to gain awareness for this horrible disease. I've the things that I've read have said that it's really, really difficult, not only on the sufferer, but on the caregivers and the family around there. And I know that you guys are working closely with UCLA and the Cognitive Health Center down there. They're doing a lot of really great things to support those families.
They really are, and you and I share UCLA roots, and they helped me with my life and support within my family. And so I'm happy to be supportive of them. But can I mention another group that we help?
Absolutely, please.
Well, you know, Jim Nance's father, Jim James Jr., died of Alzheimer's after a 13-year fight with it. And he was treated down in Houston at the Houston Methodist Hospital. And after his passing, Jim and his mother and sister formed the Nance National Alzheimer's Center. And I was introduced to this, and Jim talked so proudly about the people who, you know, have been helped, and some prominent people in golf and in football that have been treated down there. I don't want to share names because I don't think that's the right thing to do. But he's very proud of what they're doing down there. And I've had the chance to go down and meet with the doctors down there, and they're working on leading edge things, and they're making a huge difference. And so we've been happy to have them be one of our beneficiaries. And so really excited about that. And Jim's been very supportive. If you go to our website, which is ENDALZ.org, you'll see a message from Jim. I mean, he's very supportive, and he'll ask you to support us, and I hope that you will.
Well, Phil, a lot of people don't know that, you know, how Jim opened so many of his broadcasts when he would say, hello, friends. Jim happens to be a really nice, good friend of mine as well. That was for his father, who was suffering from the affliction because his dad would turn into the golf telecast, broadcast, and not know Jim's name, not know his voice, not recognize it at a time. And Jim just said it was just awful.
Well, it was a way for him to connect with his dad, and one of the things that he writes about in his book, and Jim's got a fabulous book that talks about his career, but really talks a lot about his relationship with his father and his admiration for his father. His father was, as he described, a man who, the minute he met you, you became his friend. And so that word friends is really important to Jim and his memory of his father and his connection with his father. So you're right. Every time he starts a broadcast, it's hello, friends. And he's a good friend of mine, and I appreciate all that he's doing to make a difference in this battle.
Well, Jim has agreed to come on the show, so we'll get him on the show as well. We'll talk a little bit about this. It's one of these stories, Phil. I so appreciate your time. I so appreciate you sharing a personal. I'm sure it cannot be easy at all to talk about your wife, whom you've mentioned before we started recording how much you love her. It can't be easy sharing those stories, but it can be so helpful for awareness, for people that are dealing with this. And it's also a tribute to this great game that we both love on how you and I are connected now, and hopefully other people will be connected with you, and you're kind of extending that olive branch, so to speak, through the racing world, and just it's just really about doing great things.
Well, Jay, thank you so much for giving us a voice here, you know, to your listeners, and I just encourage people to go to the website. If you go to our Facebook page, which is Racing to End Alzheimer's, you'll find a lot of material that's educational and informational, and, you know, this is such a pervasive disease that if you don't have anybody in your family with Alzheimer's now, it's unlikely that you'll make it through the rest of your life without it appearing in your life somehow, whether it be a family member or a neighbor, a school teacher, that there's somebody in your life that's going to be affected with Alzheimer's if they're not already. So it's a fight that we all have, and it's a cause that we all should be behind.
Well, Phil, again, the website, folks, is the letter R, the number 2, and END. ALZ.org, and I've been on it. It's very easy to navigate yourself through. I'm not very techy, and I had no trouble with it. And there's great information on there and a lot of ways for our listeners to get involved. So get out there and check it out. And, Phil, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thanks, Jay, and good luck on this fabulous broadcasting career.
That's awesome. Wow.
Talk about a guy that just absolutely gets it.
How about that resume? Yeah, this dude, he went to UCLA, bro. Yeah. He's got that in common.
How the
with
heck
us.
You get all that way going to UCLA, and we got where we got when going to
what?
UCLA?
What? I know. I don't know what happened. Yeah, just a terrific guy. I said to him before we did the interview, I said, Phil, are you comfortable talking about this? And he goes, man, I wasn't when I started, you know, and I didn't know his Jim Nance connection. But I've got that connection with Jim. I knew about Jim's father, and I knew that he started all of his shows with Hello Friends because
of
his father.
I'm so happy to hear that now.
I want everybody to know that.
I was going to say that. When I was when I was listening to the interview, that's exactly what I said to myself, because I really like Jim Nantz, but I never quite get that sometimes. I don't always. I wish that story could be told, and it could be told for all the reasons that we're hearing this interview, is what people can learn about the bigger picture and how it connected. I don't know. That maybe Jim's thought that through and doesn't want to do it, but maybe next time you talk to him, throw that out there and just say, hey, that's a powerful story right there.
He doesn't, you know, I think it was, and I don't know where Jim sits on this, so we'll ask him when we talk to him. But yeah, it's great stuff. Here's another example, Pearl. So how about Phil taking the car idea, putting the names and the loved ones and honoring them, and for some cases they're memorialized, you know, if they've passed away, and figuring out a way, you know, to raise money for this cause. And again, we talk about golf and charity. Mm-hmm. And now this is auto racing and charity. But Phil and I, we talked quite a bit, and that's, you know, we didn't have everything that we spoke about on the interview. But this game, John, we it's just amazing. I mean, we got to talk about Pebble Beach. The magnitude of the PGA Tour and the U.S. Open is ridiculous. It's just
changed. How many U.S. Opens did you play in? And actually, you played in one at Pebble.
I did. I played in one at Pebble in 92. I only played in three U.S. Opens.
Okay, so how would you...
I played in three or four U.S. Ams.
Especially compared to Pebble.
Yeah.
How would you compare... What year did you play?
92.
How would you compare 92 to this year? And when you're saying the magnitude's changed, what are some specifics that say that changed?
Well, first of all, it's the corporate involvement. It is the That's not first. First of all, it's the people. There are so many people that come out to this thing.
Way more so than when you're there,
John.
Because people come from a ways normally to get out there.
Right.
It's a beautiful place, but if you're driving from like any city, it's going to take a while.
Oh yeah, Pearl.
It's not easy to fly into either. You're kind of flying into SFO.
Right. The other thing is, Pearl, is they'll fly all the way there to volunteer for the week. They'll take vacation time. It is remarkable. And the Endeavor just doesn't stop with, you know, the players in 92 were the best players in the world at the time. We were all the best players in the world at the time. It's a great event and all that. That hasn't changed. The quality of the play has changed some. I just truly believe the players are better. That's all there is to it. The equipment's changed. The game, and we've talked about that, you know, at nauseam probably for our folks. But the corporate side, what Tiger's done to make it cool, if you were able to somehow take a cross section of the people that go to these things,
has that changed?
Oh, for sure.
It is
such a broader spectrum now, Pearl. Okay. There are people coming in from all over the place to watch this. It is fantastic. It really is.
How about that, like the energy level there? I mean, obviously when you're a player, you couldn't be too much more pumped than when you were playing in the U.S. Open. But just as a spectator, and you had your entertainment group, right?
Did
you have a group there for several days?
I sure did. I had a pleasure. They were just had their jaws open the whole time.
So the energy was just palpable then.
Yeah, terrific. And there's just excitement in the air. And
how about organization, Jay? I've been lucky to go to the Masters before. Other times I've
They're getting better. Let's put it that way. They're getting better. They are not in the same category as Augusta
yet.
Probably
nobody is, probably.
Right. That's fair. Yeah. Very fair. But they're getting better.
Good.
Pearl, we got to close up this back nine. Okay. Man, it went fast. That's going to do it for the back nine. We'll be headed to the 19th hole after these messages. This is Golf with Jay Delsing on 101. ESPN.
Now that spring is here, if you're like me, you're looking at ways to freshen up your home. So, I want to tell you about Jerseyville Carpet and Furniture Gallery. They have the largest selection of Lazy Boy and Flex Steel furniture, with a full-service Mohawk color center, including carpet, hardwood, laminate, and waterproof flooring, and they offer professional installation. They've got sofas starting at $377, Lazy Boy recliners regularly $1,593 for only $798. The great thing about Jerseyville is that they offer delivery and setup, and they haul off your old furniture for free. Jerseyville has been family-owned since 1973, starting with Danny Capps. Come on by and talk to Danny's sons, Matt or Jared Capps, or one of the designers for in-home consultations. You can visit their website at www.jerseyvillecarpetfurniture.net.
That's awesome. Wow.
talking about a guy that just absolutely gets it.
How about that resume? Yeah. This dude, yeah. He went to UCLA, bro. Yeah. He's got that in common.
How the
with
heck
us.
You get all that way going to UCLA, and we got where we got when going to
what?
UCLA?
What? I know. I don't know what happened. Yeah, just a terrific guy. I said to him before we did the interview, I said, Phil, are you comfortable talking about this? And yeah. He goes, man, I wasn't when I started. You know, and I didn't know his Jim Nance connection. But I've got that connection with Jim. I knew about Jim's father, and I knew that he started all of his shows with Hello Friends because
See,
of his
I'm
father.
I'm so happy to hear that now.
I want everybody
more,
to know
I was going
to
say that. When I was listening to the interview, that's exactly what I said to myself, because I really like Jim Nance, but I never quite get that sometimes. I don't always. I wish that story could be told, and it could be told for all the reasons that, that we're hearing this interview. Is what people can learn about the bigger picture and how it connected. I don't know. That maybe Jim's thought that through and doesn't want to do it, but maybe next time you talk to him, throw that out there and just say, hey, that's a powerful story right there.
He doesn't, you know, I think it was, and I don't know where Jim sits on this, so we'll ask him yeah. when we talk yeah. to him. But yeah, it's great stuff. Here's another example, Pearl. So how about Phil taking the car idea, putting the names yeah. and the loved ones and honoring them and for some cases, they're memorialized, you know, if they've passed away, and figuring out a way, you know, to raise money for this cause. And again, we talk about golf and charity. Mm-hmm. And now this is auto racing and charity. But Phil and I, we talked quite a bit, and that's, you know, we didn't have everything that we spoke about on the interview. But this game, John, we it's just amazing. I mean, we got to talk about Pebble Beach, the magnitude of the PGA Tour and the U.S. Open. It's ridiculous. It's just
changed. How many U.S. Opens? How many U.S. Opens did you play in? And actually, you played in one at least one at Pebble.
I did. I played in one at Pebble in '92. I only played in three U.S. Opens.
Okay, so how would you?
I played in three or four USAMs,
especially compared to Pebble.
Yeah.
How would you compare? What year did you play?
'92.
How would you compare '92 to this year? And when you're saying the magnitude's changed, what are some specifics that changed?
Well, first of all, it's the corporate involvement. It is the and that's not, scratch that. That's not first. First of all, it's the people. There are so many people that come out to this thing.
Way more so than when you're there,
John.
Because people come from a ways normally to get out there.
Right.
It's a beautiful place, but if you're driving from like any city, it's going to take a while.
Oh yeah, Pearl.
It's not easy to fly into either. You're kind of flying into SFO.
Right. The other thing is, Pearl, is they'll fly all the way there to volunteer for the week. They'll take vacation time. It is remarkable, and the endeavor just doesn't stop with, you know, the players in '92 were the best players in the world at the time. We were all the best players in the world at the time. It's a great event and all that. That hasn't changed. The quality of the play has changed some. I just truly believe the players are better. That's all there is to it. The equipment's changed the game, and we've talked about that, you know, ad nauseum probably for our folks. But the corporate side, what Tiger's done to make it cool, if you were able to somehow take a cross-section of the people that go to these things.
Has that changed?
Oh, for sure.
How?
It is
How?
Such a broader spectrum now, Pearl.
Okay.
There are people coming in from all over the place to watch this. It is fantastic. It really is.
How about that, like the energy level there? I mean, obviously when you're a player, you couldn't be too much more pumped than when you were playing in the U.S. Open. But just as a spectator, and you had your entertainment group, right?
Did
you have a group there for several days?
I sure did. I had a pleasure. They were just had their jaws open the whole time.
So the energy was just palpable then.
Yeah, terrific. And there's just excitement in the air. And
how about organization, Jay? I've been lucky to go to the Masters before. Other times
they're getting better. Let's put it that way. They're getting better. They are not in the same category as Augusta
well,
yet.
Probably nobody is, probably.
Right, that's fair.
Yeah.
Very fair, but they're getting better.
Good.
Pearl, we got to close up this back nine.
Okay.
Man, it went fast. That's going to do it for the back nine. We'll be headed to the 19th hole after these messages. This is Golf with Jay Delsing on 101 ESPN.
Now that spring is here, if you're like me, you're looking at ways to freshen up your home. So, I want to tell you about Jerseyville Carpet and Furniture Gallery. They have the largest selection of Lazy Boy and Flex Steel furniture, with a full-service Mohawk color center, including carpet, hardwood, laminate, and waterproof flooring, and they offer professional installation. They've got sofas starting at $377, Lazy Boy recliners regularly $1,593 for only $798. The great thing about Jerseyville is that they offer delivery and setup, and they haul off your old furniture for free. Jerseyville has been family-owned since 1973, starting with Danny Capps. Come on by and talk to Danny's sons, Matt or Jared Capps, or one of the designers for in-home consultations. You can visit their website at www.jerseyvillecarpetfurniture.net.
Urban Chestnut Brewing Company is proud to be an official sponsor of 101 ESPN's newest show, Golf with our friend Jay Delsing. Just like Jay, Urban Chestnut is born right here in St. Louis. With three local brewing and restaurant locations, you won't travel far to sample straight from the source. If you're heading out to the links this weekend, or if you're just in the mood for a classic German-style beer, grab a four-pack of our fresh, refreshing Zwickel Bavarian Lager wherever craft beers are sold. Urban Chestnut Brewing Company, St. Louis, Missouri. Prost!
It's time for the 19th hole on Golf with Jay Delsing. The 19th hole is brought to you by Mike Duffy's Pub and Grill.
Mike Duffy's Pub and Grill, the best burgers in town since 1986. Mike Duffy's Pub and Grill, the best burgers in town since 1986.
Well, thanks for staying with us and welcome to the 19th hole. Pearly just finished 18. It's time to pop
back
one
and
open.
Think about it a little
That's
bit.
Right. What just happened? This is Golf with Jay Delsing. Jay and John are here, and like to thank Mike Duffy. He's our official home of the 19th hole. Mike has got there are three Mike Duffy's locations, but Mike actually owns two of them: one in Richmond Heights and one in Kirkwood. And we've already had an event at his place. We had a great time, and we are going to do another one in July. So he had a real simple mission. He wanted to have great food. He wanted to have a local kind of a grill where people could come hang out, watch the game, have good food served by great people. So mission accomplished for Mike. You got to come out and check out. He's got daily specials. There's trivia nights, live music, expanded menus, and meet huge selection of beer.
We like beer.
Yes. Yeah, so come and see Mike Duffy's Grill. Anytime you walk in there, ask for Mike. He's there somewhere working his works really hard and would love to shake hands and say hi. So, yeah, thanks to Mike Duffy's. And, okay, so John, we've kind of got a Pebble Beach theme going.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Back in 2002, I think this is widely received as the best golf that's ever been played. And it was Tiger Woods winning the U.S. Open in 2002. By how many shots?
16.
15 shots.
15 shots, yeah.
So let me ask you this before we start. Anybody in, you're in my lifetime, and you're much older than I am, one full year, anybody ever going to win a major by 15?
I can't fathom it. I can't fathom it, no.
15?
Yeah. Yeah, he just, I remember certain shots throughout that week, but he just had a whole different feel for that golf course. And I just some of the things he did. What was it, a 6-iron or 7-iron?
7-iron on number 6 out of the hay.
So that could have gone anywhere or nowhere. And he just popped it right up there like it was absolutely nothing. You know, and we saw a lot of strength from Woodland. It was different conditions. There was other things that were different about it. But to win by that margin, I don't know. Again, like I said, I can't fathom it. How do you think Tiger felt? He was there, obviously, because he was the one that did it back then, and he had that capability. How do you justify or clear that up in your own mind when you're Tiger, of kind of what you got in the tank now versus what you had in the tank then?
Oh man, I don't know.
That's, I mean, it had to be hard. You know, there was plenty of discussion this last weekend about, you know, how much energy he had, you know, where's the real, you know, excitement with him and that kind of stuff. So I don't know if he was hurting. I don't know if it was a little bit of, I simply can't do what I used to do, and this isn't is quite as cool. By the way, he had a spectacular finish. I don't know how much you watched there.
Oh, no, he did. Attention. Did you see that beautiful little, like, 8 or 9 iron shot he hit in on 18? It was unbelievable.
Some of the stuff he did towards, because I think he was 2 or 3 over, and he ends up getting it back to
2 under or something.
To 2 under.
That's
so
the thing that he also does. Never gives up on anything.
No.
Which is so, I mean, it's a 60-foot putt for par, and he's over there treating it like it's a 5-footer. I remember talking to Mark O'Meara after this and saying, what? Because Mark was really kind of his mentor. Mm-hmm. And he said that he played with him in the practice round, and Johnny Miller came up to him and said something like, what's up with this kid? And Mark said, he goes, Johnny, this is the best player that's ever played golf.
How'd that
and
go
Johnny
over
was
Johnny?
Like, what did I go over with Johnny? Yeah, you know, it didn't go over well. But I will tell you this. Somewhere along the line, I remember in the listening to the telecast back in 02, Johnny said something like, Tiger Woods is going to break all the records, all the USGA records or something. And,
well, he had already broke kind of most of them as far as when you go back to his amateur career.
His amateur career, like yeah. The thing that stood out in my mind, that 6-iron was amazing, or 7-iron was amazing on number 6. But, John, I don't know if you remember this, but on 16, the last day, he hit it kind of over the green at a brutal little pitchy chip sort of thing down for the back left hole location and hit it about 15 feet past the hole. And he's up by 15. He's got 3 holes left. I mean, nothing can happen short of a heart attack that's going to keep him from winning. And he grinds his putt and makes it. And they said, and I can remember Roger Maltby going, what is the, you know, and there's a fist pump.
Yeah.
And it was because he set out a goal that he wanted to have a clean card. He didn't want to make a bogey all day.
There's a whole psychology right there. We were taught that a lot in college.
Yes,
play
we
old
were.
Man par, play yep. the golf course, forget about everybody else on top of it. But I also remember Nota Begay, who played golf with him at Stanford, and a couple of the other guys, Casey Martin was there, sure. And those guys would talk about Tiger just didn't want to beat you.
Oh, no.
If he had you 5 down, yeah. he was determined to get you 6. And if he had you 6, he wanted to get you 8. And if he could win every single hole, he wanted to win every single hole.
Ask Stephen Ames. Remember what happened to Stephen Ames?
No.
So Stephen Ames said something to the effect before they played the match play event at La Costa, said something to the effect like, I'm playing great. I hope he plays great too, and we'll just see. And something else came out in what he said that was Tiger looked at as a challenge, mm-hmm. like, oh, or maybe even on the disrespectful side.
Plus, Tiger's probably looking for that, too, to get himself
100%.
Jacked up. Yeah.
And I want to add this before I tell you the end of the story, but Tiger not only wanted to beat you, he wanted to spectacularly beat you. He wanted buzzers and bells and fireworks and fist pumps and all that. And Stephen Ames lost 9-8.
Beat them till they bleed and beat them for bleeding. That's what my father used to say to me all the time, and that's a little bit what Tiger's after. He just wanted to have dominance so that next time you teed it up with him, you knew you would lose.
No question.
He absolutely wanted that.
Yep, no question.
He wants that for the whole field, and then he has a better chance each week.
It's an amazing that story in 2000, and I said 2002. It was 2000, I'm sorry.
Right, yeah.
When Tiger won at the U.S. Open.
I wasn't going to correct you again. Yeah. You were close. You were in the 2000s.
Hey, that's what we do here. We're not accurate.
Had you said 18-something, I would have jumped right in.
Hang on a minute. You missed it by 200 years, I'd be okay. Yeah, a couple centuries. Well, no, but
what a spectacular U.S. Open. How fun to watch. I don't know. Where the heck is it? Wingfoot. Wingfoot next year.
I got to play Wingfoot in 2006. I was 46 years old and got to play Wingfoot.
I almost canted for you that time. Because I dragged those clubs
through that qualifier when you
made the qualifier. I think it was Fox Run, which was spectacular.
In a playoff.
But it was during my fishing trip up in Canada, and that just doesn't get
Although, if I ever had
a regret in any single year, it was that year because you were playing so good. And I think you only missed the day and cut by one. And
Steve Stricker hold his bunker shot, not that I remember. Steve Stricker hold his bunker shot while I was putting out on 18 in the morning, and I made about an 8-footer for par at number 18 to get to 10 over. Steve Stricker hold his bunker shot to go to 1 under. 10 shot rule missed. 62
well,
players also
because I was always
two.
Good for somewhere between 5 and 6 shots.
Of course you were. A day.
Well, no, I 5 or 6, but I was going to say I'm not sure which way. Sometimes
right.
5 or 6
yeah,
hurt you, sometimes
right.
5 or 6
that's
helped
right.
you. So who knows? You could have been in the lead or you could have missed by
right,
a dozen.
Right, we could have missed by a dozen. Let's talk real quickly about the tip of the week, and we got to give our clever RX plug. But so the tip of the week, I wanted to think of something really simple that would universally help people across the bag, and it's like this. Take one extra club. Just take one extra club. If you need to choke down 1/2 inch on your shaft, if you think it's a 7, take a six.
But I think I can get the 7 or 8 there.
I know. That's why you said take a six. Yeah. I used to do this with my dad, and he would never do it. And he's like, oh, no, I just didn't hit that. And I was like, come on, Dad. I play with guys all the time. They just – you don't know exactly how far your average distance is going to go with your 6-iron. You know how far the really good one goes.
Right. Well, I couldn't say that to my dad because he already had the 3-wood in his hand.
No right. Where oh, yeah, no doubt.
He didn't have more club in the bag.
And your dad would putt with his 3-wood, too. So, yeah, guys, this show is flying by. I want to talk just a little bit about Clever RX. We've got the information behind us on our Facebook Live stuff. But anyone that wants to try to lower your prescription drug cost, reach out to me, jay@jaydelsongolf.com. I will share with you this Clever RX app. It is remarkable. You know, my oldest sister, Kim, has got some pretty serious health injuries, health issues, and takes some high-powered medicines for her rheumatoid arthritis and her form of lupus and things like that. I sent her this Clever RX. It saved her $80 on her first prescription. It's absolutely free, and this app can save you money. It will simply tell you in your area when you put in your zip code where to go to get the cheapest prescription. That's it. I don't care if you have insurance or not, and 80% of the time, it'll help. Clever RX for sure, and reach out to me, jay@jaydelsongolf.com, for the Clever RX app.
So tip of the week, save shots in your round, and Clever RX saves dollars out of your pocket.
That's right, and we all know how we're fortunate. We don't have to take a bunch of
not yet.
Drugs at this point
in time. Baby.
And Meath, man, is this show over already?
It's over. It's over.
Was it over when the
fat lady singing? I heard in the background.
Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? No. Oh, that's a different movie. Pearl, thanks for being with me. Me, thanks for running the board. Drew, thanks for the team at BYK Digital for getting us live on Facebook. This is Golf with Jay Delsing, and hit 'em straight, St. Louis.
That was Golf with Jay Delsing, brought to you by Whitmore Country Club. Tune in next Sunday from 7 to 8 for more from Jay, John, and the other pros and experts from the golf world. In the meantime, you can find all of Jay's shows at 101ESPN.com, as well as at jaydelsinggolf.com.